Hey, welcome to the Zootown Podcast. So glad that you're listening. If you love what you hear, share it. If you don't love what you hear, then don't share it. But one reason we're doing this is because we believe that in the Christian community, it has become very divisive over ideas. It's become divisive over theology. And it doesn't mean that we aren't very firm in certain things, but we want to stay focused on Christ and we want to be able to have normal conversation because that is lacking in our society. And so that's what the vision behind this podcast is. It's not that we endorse every single thing that people say, but we endorse them as people who are made in the image of God. And so that's why we do this. So thanks for joining us. Love you guys. Well, thanks everyone for joining today. And as we say in the intro, we always want to give different perspectives. And a couple weeks ago, we dropped a podcast with Jayton Simpson, just talking about his involvement with Black Lives Matter and just a lot of the racial stuff that's going on in our country right now, but we also want to be a podcast that gives different perspectives and kind of listens to different people's stories. And we're a church that just believes everyone is on a journey and everyone is brings unique life perspective to things. And so we want to share that. And so we want to give just the officer law enforcement perspective today with our man Rico Suazo. What a great name. That's like just rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, well, it's actually Ricardo, but playing sports, that was a little too long to get yelled at, you know? So, you know, in sports, you're always breaking name down.
Yeah.
So Rico, yeah.
What was your nickname, though? Everyone's
got it. It was Rico.
That's just your nickname?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
My mother refuses to call me Rico, but
it's always Ricardo. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful, though. Yeah. Because is it like Ricardo?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was my, you know, it was. It's the name they gave me.
Yeah.
So she's like, I ain't calling you Rico. You think you're cool? I ain't calling you
No, that's
Rico.
Like coming to America, right? Like his mama named him Cassius Clay. I'm going to call him Cassius Clay.
Yeah. Actually, my son's name is Cassius.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I took some inspiration from Cassius Clay and a couple other people. And
oh, that's a great name. You going to call him Cash or Cassius?
I've been calling him Cassius. My wife calls him Cash.
Good.
And other people do. But I'm one to call people by their full name or God-given name.
That's great.
That's cool.
So we brought Rico on because he is a part of the Missoula Police Department, and he is a person of color. So he brings a unique perspective to everything that's going on right now and the narrative that's happening around our country and also just in our city. So, again, thanks a lot for coming on, Rico. Yeah. And just tell us about yourself. Where are you from? How'd you get here?
All right. Well, first off, I want to thank you for bringing me on. I appreciate the opportunity. I got to say, I've got to admit that I was reluctant when you reached out.
Yeah.
Some of that is because this is way out of my comfort zone, you know, even though we're not sitting in front of hundreds of people, like public speaking has never been my thing. And also because it's like this topic or the topics that you brought up or it's pretty sensitive, you know,
absolutely.
Especially right now. I feel like as a country or community, I mean, we're divided in so many ways, you know, which is sad. You know, it's almost like the way I feel may not jive with a lot of other folks. And if, you know, it's just, I mean, you're getting publicly shamed privately or, you know, and it's tough because it's makes it hard for you to speak out or speak up. You know, especially for someone like me who kind of like is the guy that doesn't want to ruffle any feathers. You know what I mean? I just kind of do my thing, live my life. And
that's going to be hard when you're a cop, though.
It
you don't want to ruffle feathers.
Yeah, no. And I can do it with, you know, with folks that I interact with out on the street. But, I mean, within like my group, I mean, I've always thought, I mean, truthfully, we're some of the most judgmental folks within our group. And so that's tough, you know, always trying to please people, and just be the guy that's just cool, you know what I mean? But the way things are going now, it's always been a time, but now, more than ever to speak out or speak your truth. You know, and I got to give a shout out to my wife who was very encouraging, you know what I mean? When I, explained to her how I felt about this and my hesitancy, it's like, dude, just go in there.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're well-spoken. Just go in there and speak your truth. You're not, you know, you're not there to make everyone else happy. You know what I'm saying? And with that being said, like...
Yeah, that's impossible to make everyone happy.
Yeah, yeah. With that being said, like, what I say today is a representation of how I feel. You know
Great.
What I mean? I'm not... I'm Missoula police officer, but I'm not speaking for anybody there, you know. Yeah. So, yeah.
I have to give that buffer a lot, too, as a pastor, so don't feel bad.
Like, yeah.
You have your private Instagram and you have your private thoughts that you, you know, as a church, we always want to let our staff express where they're at. But as the leader of the church, sometimes you feel like you're speaking for the entire church.
Right,
and that's
right.
not true. That's yeah. actually not true sometimes. It's like that's they don't see the behind conversations that we have where yeah. we disagree cordially and love yeah. each other and push through. So yeah. we get it, man. We get yeah. it. So
and it's important. You should be able to speak freely. But
absolutely.
You know, so it's you're getting it from all different kinds of sides. You yeah. know what I'm saying? If we're not on the same team or it's red or blue or,
yeah.
you know, it's just like you get canceled.
Yeah. Well, we ain't trying to do
you
that.
You know what
man.
I mean? So yeah, no, but I appreciate it, man. And I'm happy to be here.
Yeah.
So.
Well, thank you, man. So, yeah. Where'd you come from? Like, where'd you grow up? Where were you born? How'd you get to Montana?
So I'm originally from LA, born to two parents who are from Honduras.
Okay.
You know, my father came to the States first in the mid-70s, and then my mom followed shortly thereafter, and I was born a few years later.
Okay.
So, actually, my first language was Spanish.
Oh, okay.
You know, and so, living in an inner city, I learned quickly, you know, how to speak English or, you know, yeah. going to school, just so I could be able to interact with my friends, you know what I mean? Because I had black friends, I had Latino friends, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, growing up.
What neighborhood in LA? Like, there's different.
I'd say West LA.
Okay.
You know, so very diverse community. You know, a lot of violence. But luckily for me, I've been blessed, man. My parents did their best to provide for me, or provide a good life for me, or actually like put me out there to have opportunities. You know what I mean? I mean, we didn't always. By no means did we. Live a rich life, you know what I mean? But we were comfortable. My parents worked their butts off to have what we had. And, you know, growing up, our biggest currency was love and family. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? It wasn't what kind of shoes I was wearing or, you know, or what we could get, you know. And I understood that. I recognized that from such a young age. Eventually, at I think second grade, we moved out to a suburb, and I spent my entire life going to Catholic school.
Oh, okay.
I mean, and so with that, you know, my parents worked very hard to provide that for me. I mean, you know, you've got Catholic school tuition.
Yeah, private school, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah, and so yeah, I mean, it was tough, but I wouldn't have known that at that time because, you know, they did their best. I mean, there was a time we were on food stamps. I mean, mm-hmm. My family worked jobs like being a housekeeper or being a caretaker of a home. Mm-hmm. But that was never an issue. May have been an obstacle for my parents, but for me, it was like I saw less of that, you know,
yeah.
of those obstacles. Yeah, so growing up in Catholic school, so we moved to a suburb, it's Bell, California, in LA County. My school was predominantly, I was the only person of color there,
yeah.
you know. And so that brought on a lot of attention and expectations, I think. And also being like one of the tallest kids in my class, it was like all the attention's on me, you know what I mean? Like I'm as tall, I'm like in fifth grade as tall as some of these eighth graders, you
yeah.
know what I'm saying? And so, yeah, there was always that aspect. And then when I went to high school, I went to an all-boys Catholic school, which was predominantly black and had Latino students, you know. And during that time, it's kind of like I was accepted by both, you know.
Okay.
But I gravitated towards, like, my African-American friends,
okay.
you know what I mean? Got a little bit of heat from my Latino friends, you
really?
Know, mm-hmm. it's like, what, like, why aren't you sitting with us? Or,
oh, yeah.
you know, but we'd interact and it was always cool because we'd interact and speak Spanish. I mean, so they knew I wasn't like being fake or trying to be different.
Yeah,
you know
like,
what I mean?
Not be a part of them.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, growing up, at that time, you know, most of my friends are black, you know, I like wanted to wear Timberlands, you know. I wore Eddie Bauer, you know. What I mean? I went to school dances. I mean, and so it was a interesting experience. But for me, I was never felt, or I was never made to feel like I needed to choose what side are you on, you know what I mean? Because I just loved everybody, you know. and so...
It's obviously sports. You played sports.
Yeah, I did. So. I played basketball. We had a pretty successful high school career, something that I really enjoyed. And then from there, I went to a private school in Northern California.
Okay.
Which at that time I got to be amongst like people of different races, you know?
Yeah.
It was a great experience. And for some reason, I ended up leaving that year and going back home. I went to a junior college out in Santa Clarita Valley, which is, how do I say this? I mean, mostly a white neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And people with money,
yeah.
You know what I mean? But for me, that was almost my only option because I went there through a friend who encouraged me to go there, ended up being like an assistant coach there for me. And that was a tough time. I rode a bus and I rode buses and trains 2.5 hours each way. Oh. I mean, that was a grind.
That
man.
Is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's not like looking back on it, I wouldn't have had it any different. You know what I mean? Because I got to meet different kinds of folks, have different kinds of experiences. And from there, I had to take a year off because I got hurt. And then one of my assistant coaches calls me up and says, hey, man, if you've got nowhere to go yet, because I wanted to continue playing basketball because I knew that that would be a way for me to get an education,
mm-hmm.
you know, possibly free or just at a, you know, a cheaper one.
Yeah.
And he says, I got a job in Great Falls, Montana, at the University of Great Falls. You know, like, I'd love for you to come down. Check it out. If you like it, you know, we'd love to have you.
It's
you
just know. Like California.
Yeah. He didn't say anything. Man. Yeah. And so as soon as I got off the phone with him, you know, I get on my dial-up AOL and like, where is Great Falls, Montana? Or where is Montana? You know? And then I was like, all right, cool. And the biggest deciding factor was like, you know what? At that time, no one in my family had graduated from college.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it was like, let's, you know, my parents worked hard enough to get me to this place. Let's go there, give it a chance, get my degree, and come back home. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because it may have taken me longer if I stayed home with distractions, friends, or just not being able to get to school.
Yeah.
You know? So I get to Great Falls. I actually took a recruiting trip, and it was different.
What month was it? I just don't know.
It was in the summertime, which is like perfect for them.
February.
Yeah, and so it was very different, man, because you don't have the hustle and bustle of the city,
mm-hmm.
you know. But I met some great people, who were all very accepting. I mean, I didn't get treated any different because of the color of my skin.
Mm.
Just got treated as an athlete that's potentially going to come here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, had a great time. I think I did everything there is to do in Great Falls, Montana in like one weekend.
A week?
So I was like, you know what? This is not bad. I can do this. This will be easy.
Yeah.
And
you went to the bar with the fishbowl.
Oh, yeah. The sip and dip. Yeah, all of that, man. And so I had a great time, and I committed. And then I start the school year, and I think – I want to say that at that time, most of like the people of color were mainly athletes, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I came across a lot of people that had a different way of growing up than I did. But it was, I was all in, you know, I accepted that, you know, why I was there and what my plans were. Like, I'm out of here in a couple of years, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And then October came around. September, November, and first time in snow.
Wow.
Oh, man.
First time on a horse. I was like, man, which I thought was cool. You know, what I, as scared as I was, like,
who had the horse?
Because I mean, these are types of things that you don't experience back home. You know what I mean? Because it's not that you're sheltered, but you do what your family can or what your family can't afford to do. But yeah, then that first snow came, and I was like, man, this is crazy. You know, looking outside, and I'm like, and in my head, I'm thinking, maybe that means we don't have to go to school, you know?
Snow day in college.
Yeah, but then it's like, nope, they got these things called snow plows, which clear the roads and make it very, everything accessible. And yeah, so that was really different for me, but it was a good time. And I have no regrets for having come up here. I moved up here in 2003, you know, now it's 2020. So this place had my heart from the beginning, you know. You know, I listened to Jaton's podcast, and I kind of had I remember him talking about his ride from the airport in the state car. He's in the back seat, and he's got this kid that rolls by and is waving at him, you know, like, which he thought was, like, you know, just not normal.
Yeah, you don't wave at people in California.
Yeah, yeah, you don't, man, because everybody's got somewhere to go, something to do, and people just don't, like, back home, people don't really care as much as they should, you know, because everybody's going somewhere, you know.
So you would say, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And so I spent some time here in Great Falls, and, you know, you got people smiling, waving, you know, asking how you're doing, and I'm like, man, dude, is there something on my face that I don't know about? Because people are like, you know, and especially looking different, you know what I'm saying? But then I realized that that's the community. That's the type of people that live in Montana, you know what I mean? And so that for me was huge because I never got that back home, you know? I didn't drive a car till I was like 23, so up until that point, I was always in the subway or on a bus, and, you know, everybody's just minding their own business, you know. If you talk to someone, it's like, why are you talking to me? Or what do you want?
Yeah.
You know. But I thought that was beautiful, man. It was, and especially, like, at certain times, feeling out of place, you know. It was just awesome that the way I looked, that was different than what they were maybe used to. It was a huge welcome.
That's awesome.
And so spending time there is actually, I mean, there's an Air Force base there, so I got to, like, interact with, you know, Puerto Ricans, you know, African-American people or people from different countries. You know, there's some diversity there, and that's, like, who I spent a lot of time with, you know. I mean, because for me, it was like a little bit of home, and it was a little bit of like we might share the same experiences, you know. So, but yeah, and I moved up here once I got to move to Missoula, once I got the job. So my life here has been great, you know. I consider myself lucky. I've been blessed to be in a place like this, especially after choosing the profession that I'm in.
Yeah.
I mean, life expectancy might be a little higher, you know what I mean? We're dealing with different things. I mean, I think that police work is in a way the same in a lot of places, you know? But it's just, it's different here, you know? Yeah.
So just not even just from a cop perception, but, just obviously you're engaged with what's going on in the U.S. and the world, and specifically just with race relations right now. And how do you view it, man, as a person of color who's been in California and then you've been in Montana? Like, what's your kind of view? What's your thoughts on it, man?
I mean, it's been hard as far as current events. Like I mentioned, we're so divided, man. And it's hard to see, you know. Going back to my, like, upbringing, I mean, I never really had to deal much with racism, you know. I think a lot of that is, like, the way my parents chose to raise me. But yeah, it's hard to see what's going on. And I think when I say we're divided, I mean, we're divided like it's one race against the other. I mean, that's the way I feel sometimes. It may mm-hmm. not be like that for everybody, but it's tough to deal with. It's tough to see. And it's really sad and also scary. But yeah, I mean, I think that at this point, man, like the only person I can trust is God, you know, I'm a spiritual person. Cause I feel that even though I haven't like had the same experiences as my brothers and sisters, like it's been, you know, there's been racism from the time I was born up until now,
yeah.
You know? And I feel like thinking back on growing up, I mean, it's like at the forefront right now, you know?
Like, do you get, so when you see people really passionate about this and making this on the front lines, like yeah. after George Floyd and, yeah. you know, that horrible incident, like, do you understand it?
Do you get it? I do. And I absolutely love it, man, because I think we're at a time where people are speaking up more or just doing a better job of showing, like, what it is that people of color are dealing with, you know what I mean? But 1991, Rodney King, like I was 10, 11 years old at that time.
Yeah.
You know, man, so I got to see that. And as a 10-year-old, it's like you just look at it as like this is chaos or... but then at that time, like clothing that expressed like race was big. You know what I mean? Like I had Malcolm X shirts. Like yeah. I remember having a Malcolm X.
You wore them backwards because of Crisscross.
Well, yeah, yeah. Only when the song came on, and only at home. I never went out like that in public. But you know, and I remember my parents, and since because we use a lot of public transportation, and we were going in the city, or, you know, in the inner cities. Like I was told I couldn't wear it. You know. Mm. And as a 10-year-old, you're like, why? It's just a shirt. It's just a chain. It's just a hat. I don't remember if you were remember cross colors.
Yeah.
You know, it was like red. Yeah, the red, the green, yeah. the yellow. And I couldn't understand it then because for me it was like, well, what's someone going to do to me for wearing this shirt? You know what I mean? But their fears were that I would be placed into a group that was maybe rebellious, or I would bring attention to myself that, you know, would put me in an unsafe position, which sucked because I loved it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And if clothes put you in an unsafe position, that's wrong. That's
yeah.
bad.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And my dad was always someone to, you know, he's about expressing yourself, expressing your roots, expressing like where you came from, you know? Yeah. And for me, it was like, you know, like I said, my parents are from Honduras, or, you know, I'm a Latino, but to most people, even today, they consider me black, you know, which I don't know if it was a reason why I gravitated towards, you know, the African American kids at my school, you know, something that's hard to admit. And I remember this, like I always considered I considered myself black, and that's mm-hmm. how I identified myself, you know, because trying to explain to young kids where Honduras is
yeah.
or what, you know,
it's like trying to explain to you where Montana is.
Yeah, exactly, man. And so that was hard. And so I thought, you know what, if I just say I'm black because I look black,
yeah.
you know what I mean? I have black features, like, no one's gonna like give me a hard time for anything, you know. But it's funny because my black friends would say, "Yeah, you're Mexican," which would like I would be livid, man, because not necessary. I mean, but to them, they were identifying me as a Latino.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. But for them, I guess like that just meant being Mexican.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm not Mexican, man. But then I wasn't saying, yeah, no, we're from Honduras. You know, I'm Central American.
Yeah, you pull out your little map. Like, no, actually, let me
yeah.
explain this.
Yeah,
they all yeah. kind of came together.
Yeah. Or I'd be like, yeah, I'm Puerto Rican. Because in a way, like, people would be like, oh, he's black, you
yeah.
know? Which, I mean, it's embarrassing to think about that now, you know? But as a kid, I just wasn't into, like, explaining to you, like, mm-hmm. where my family history or
yeah.
where we actually came from. You know, it just kind of took the easy easy way out, but I won't, I don't do that anymore. You know, it used to be embarrassing, like being around friends and then, or like my black friends, or speaking Spanish on the phone, or, you know, speaking Spanish to my parents, because that was their language, you know. Yeah. What I mean? But I just was scared of the questions, or scared of, like, you know, who's this dude really?
Yeah.
You know? But you know, I'm happy, about my upbringing and where I came from. And cause I know, I mean, my parents came here to afford myself and my sister a better life, you yeah. know?
So how do you, again, when you walk this balance, right? Cause you're a police officer, and you're a person of color, and you can, how do you walk that balance, man? Cause both sides, like the cops are kind of the enemy
yeah.
right now. And that's kind of a generalization, because usually just the loudest voice gets the press.
But yeah.
there's definitely a lot of talk about policing, and you also see when policing goes bad.
Yeah.
But you've also made mistakes yourself, you yeah. know? So how yeah. do you, what's that balance like, man? Like, how do you feel it? Do you feel the tension right now?
I do feel the tension, but I guess it only goes into what I read about and what I see. Maybe it's like personal attention. Cause yeah. I will say I'm blessed and I'm like, I take pride in working for the Missoula Police Department. You know what I mean? Who I feel like is an all-inclusive agency. I've never experienced any racism there. You know what I mean?
Have you experienced racism here in Missoula?
No? I have. As a cop, I have multiple times, and it's usually not in a good situation. It's most of the time it's because I'm taking someone to jail.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I've been called the N-word plenty of times.
And you stop them and pull out your map and be like, no, I'm from Honduras.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's hard, man, because it's like you can call me a pig. You can call me anything else, but for you to think that it's okay, or you to think like I'm gonna get back at this guy by calling him the N-word.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just
when you're the one being arrested.
Yeah.
That's such an odd thing to do.
And I get the position you're in, you know, but it still doesn't make it right. Cause I mean, you're like attacking me personally, you know, you're like attacking me down to my core.
Yeah.
And for you to think that like, that's the first thing I'm gonna call this guy rather than call me a curse word or
yeah.
a pig or something like that. It sucks, because then it we're still where we've been for a long time now. And so, I mean, I'm securing myself that stuff, like, doesn't always offend me. You know, but I have those moments where I'm like, mm-hmm. man, like,
I'm the one with the gun.
Yeah. Or you're in my back seat.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
How's life going for you? You know, we're here for a reason. But that, the fact that people can just throw that word out yeah. easily, it's just, it sucks.
Yeah, and it means I hate it's still it. Around.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you know, I try to keep my cool, man. Cause if you let that affect you and affect the way you interact with someone, or it results in you doing something, that now they've won.
Yeah.
You know what
absolutely.
I mean? Cause in that moment we're adversaries, but I just, it's never right to call someone that.
Yeah.
You know,
but as a cop, so two questions to this one, but as a cop, when you see something like George Floyd or, yeah. you know, and that's just one instance, right? That was the only time it was filmed.
Yeah.
you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
Like as a cop, but also as a person, like, what does that do to you, man? Like, how does that feel? And what do you think about after that? And is work awkward? I always thought about, as a person of color and a cop, when you go to work yeah. and this is like, is that awkward, man? Is it?
It's not awkward. Cause I think it doesn't come up a lot. I mean, it's not like people are coming up to me and like, hey man, how do you feel about this?
Yeah.
You know, cause I feel like people kind of respect that boundary. But, you know, I see some things in the media or I read about them, and it's infuriating, man, that even as, you know, I hate to be the Monday morning quarterback, right? Because I wasn't in that situation. I never like to speak for an officer, or even whether it's like what I've seen on TV or someone here, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? it makes me mad, and a lot of times it's because, like, I don't feel that officers are held accountable for their actions. Mm. I mean, I can look at some things and be like, okay, I understand why that happened the way it did. But then there's some where it's like, what were you thinking?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I always tell people, like, and we live in Missoula, right? We're blessed. Fortunately, like, my police department or our police department doesn't have to deal with things on that level.
Yeah.
Or it's never gotten to a point where it's never rose to the level of what we're seeing in other places, you know. But I always think about what's important is, what's it like there? You know what I mean? Because everything policing and race relations or police interaction with people of color, I think are going to be different in different regions of the country. Mm. You know, is that an excuse? No. But the truth is, like, that's the way it's going to be. I mean, I feel like, I feel Missoula, Montana is like one of, like, or if not the most diverse city in the state, you know what I mean? And, you know, we've got a lot of inclusivity here. We got a lot of, like, groups that are represented throughout our community, and that I think that makes it easier for us. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, like, there's still wrong going on, you know, in this country, and it's hard to see. And when you have situations that go wrong, or a person of color is killed at the hands of a police officer, I mean, that's not good for any of us.
Hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
But then I might get looked at as the same guy that did something like stupid 2 weeks ago on TV.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? I always feel like it's my job, and I'm passionate about police work. I always feel like one of my jobs is to try and eliminate that stigma, you know, of all cops are bad.
Yeah.
Or just there's more bad cops than there are good cops, you
yeah.
know? And that's important to me. And it's important to me in the way that I treat people that I interact with. Obviously we don't, I don't deal with people of color often, you know. I may deal with Native American people,
yeah.
you know, or African American people, but it's not as often. But I try to do my best to treat people and treat everyone as a person, you know. I always think, like, how, like, if this was my mother, like, what kind of, or my sister, my brother, my cousins, like, what kind of experience would I like them to have with police? I mean, because yeah. I still, like, we try to do right, mm-hmm. you know, when being an employee or the police officer of the Missoula Police Department. I feel like as a department, we do our best,
yeah.
you know, and we may not be dealing with the same issues as, like, Chicago or Detroit or, you know.
Yeah.
Minneapolis. I mean, I feel like the men and women of this department do their best and do it, you know, they're fighting a good fight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey guys, we hope you are enjoying this episode of the Zootown podcast. We just want to take a moment right now to remind you that likes, shares, reviews, they go a huge way as far as getting the message out further into our community, but also abroad and into other communities. So if you value this conversation and past conversations that you have heard on this podcast, we ask that you take the time to actually go and give us 5 stars. Don't give us 4. We need all of them. And leave us a review. Thanks again for being listeners to this podcast and contributors and joining the conversation.
Do you feel like a lot of pressure being, like, you're representing both, or 3, the Black community, the Hispanic community, and being just a police officer? Like, is that, where does, like, your identity, like, because you said before how you kind of identified more with the Black community growing up.
Yeah.
Right now, is there, like, do you identify more with just I'm a police officer than just I'm a Black person?
No.
Or a person of color, sorry.
I think I identify with both.
Okay.
You know, because I'm still seeing what I'm seeing on TV or reading in the news. I mean, it's still happening. You know, I'm just blessed enough to not be in a place where, you know, I'm not going to be in that position or haven't been in that position.
Yeah.
You know, and it's hard because this is a very tough profession, right?
Absolutely.
You've got to deal with so many things, so many people. But our responsibility is so great, man. And that's our responsibility is great to this community and to the world, really. I mean, because people are looking at what's happening in Missoula, Montana.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, going off of that, in terms of responsibility, where do you think the responsibility lies when it comes with fixing race relations? Like, do you feel like there's people who are saying it's not like a person of color's job to teach you about race, that if you're white, to go do your own research and things like that? And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on that.
I think we all need to be educated.
Yeah.
You know, and that education never needs to stop. But I feel, I mean, I can't speak for officers in other places, but like there's so much tension that you see, and I think a lot of times it's what that like law enforcement and relationship is with people of color. You know, it's going to be different here, obviously, than it is somewhere else, but I mean, we need to show equality, and sometimes it doesn't seem like it's being done that way.
What do you wish, I guess, the police department would do in like inner cities like that?
Yeah, like when you see something, that was kind of one of my questions, because you do bring a unique perspective. So, like, is there times, like when I watched the Jacob Blake video, both angles, right? Yeah. And there's this immediate reaction, like, on the news and, like, from Black Lives Matter. I'm looking at it, and I'm not a cop, so I'm like, maybe they did screw up.
Yeah.
But I'm like, what else were they supposed to do?
Right.
You know? So as you, as a person of color and a cop, when you see a situation like that, do you kind of, can you sit back and be like, no, that's, I mean, I see why they did this or didn't do this. Like, how do you wrestle with that?
Well, like I said, I don't like to criticize other officers, cause I wasn't in that situation. And sometimes these situations are like escalate so quickly. I mean, you have a matter of seconds to make a decision. But I also have to keep in mind, like, what was that interaction like before that happened?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? What do people of color feel when they're being pulled over by the police, or police is having an interaction with them? I mean, because things aren't always good, you know? Things aren't always as they seem on video. We don't know everything.
Yeah.
You know? Like, how does a person feel being in a situation that they're being stopped by a police officer, and that police officer ends up being a white police officer? Not to place blame, right? Because this could happen between white and black.
Yeah.
Black and black. But it's, I want to say sometimes people have the backs against the wall, you know? So that's why it's important that during my interactions, that I try to start with treating people equally or fairly, you know, and not make it about, you know, what their race is, or, you know, like I'm targeting people.
Yeah.
'Cause that humor interaction is important, right? But there's so much tension within some communities where it's like the last thing you want to do is get pulled over by a white police officer or have a white police officer show up at your door.
Like you're almost praying for a black cop to come up or something.
Yeah. And I'll use an example or some examples. Like I've had situations where I pulled over African American people, not because they're African American people, right? But I don't know this until I get up to the car. And just seeing like you know, it's like license is ready, hands on the steering wheel, being respectful, you know, and the one I can think of is like, you know, I had, two African-American people up at the front of the car. Like, and it was like, before I even got there, everything was ready, you know, and they've got their hands visible, you know, and I was taken aback because it's like not normally what I see.
Yeah. Like, why would they have to feel like they have to do that?
Yeah. And that was, and I tried to make it cool because I could see the stress that they were under or maybe how they felt in that situation. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm not, you know, I'm going to try to make this a different interaction, a different experience for them.
Yeah.
You know, and just talk with them like a casual conversation, you know, because I think that's important too, is the way you interact with someone right from the beginning, because you don't want to set like a tone where it's like, okay, I know where this is going, you know, mm-hmm. like that's important as well. I mean, we're treating people like people, right? And not based on the color of their skin or what they look like or how they're dressed. But yeah, I left that traffic stop thinking like, man, that's like, as a police officer, I appreciate it, right? Because I felt safe, you know? Yeah. But then it was like, what? Like, man, they really thought they had to act that way or, you know, present themselves that way. Like, you want to put yourself in the shoes of a person of color thinking that every time they get pulled over, they've got to, like, go about it a certain way. Because their fear is that this might turn into arrest or, like, it might turn into, like, them getting shot. And that sucks.
Yeah.
You know, and this is just Missoula, Montana. I think about like being like in a bigger city where it's like that every time, you know, and it's sad because I know that I know why I'm in this job. And I know why I'm doing what I'm doing, you know, but for someone to feel like they have to overcompensate because of the color of their skin, that, I mean, it just shouldn't be that way.
Yeah.
You know, and that actually came up this week as I was thinking about or looking over questions and thinking about how I was going to answer. But, you know, I remember getting pulled over on the way to Great Falls, nighttime, pulled over. I rolled down all my windows, right? Because in my head, it was like, let me make this guy feel as comfortable as possible. You know, we're on a highway. It's dark, late at night. It was a higher patrolman. Like, who knows how, you know, there's nobody else around. You know, I'm just thinking as a cop in that moment, you know, have my stuff ready, turn my dome light on. But in thinking back to that situation is like it would suck to think you have to do that every time. You know what I mean? And I'm only trying to make this guy comfortable because we're out in the middle of nowhere and I'm a cop and I know what it would, you know, I know it would be nice to like,
oh this is when you were guy, a cop?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we get pulled over too. But
you guys wouldn't have like a special hand wave or something?
No, nothing, like, man. You know? Yeah. But then I was like, think about what it would be like to have to do that every time.
Oh, that's a really good perspective.
If maybe it was just like a normal traffic stop that can turn into like you might not make it home that day, you know? So, yeah, it's hard. And like I said, I don't like to criticize, man, but...
But you recognize there's a problem.
Oh, absolutely. There's always been a problem.
Yeah.
You know? And now... Now I'm seeing it, or I guess I'm recognizing it as a huge problem for people of color, you know, to have to deal with every day. And I feel like there's so much attention on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I mean, it's like September 11, you know, what happened after that? I mean, people like Muslims were being targeted and, you know, there was more attention on them when, no, like you've had people that have been in America for a very long time. You got people like my parents that came here to try to make a better living for their children, you know, and they're being targeted because of their, you know, religious beliefs or, you know, what they look like, you know, their race, ethnicity. So, yeah, it's a huge problem. And I feel like... community outreach would be helpful.
Yeah.
But it's like this has happened. I mean, and you can say it's systemic. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like what at this point is police like being more community like dealing with more community policing or community outreach? What is that going to do? You know, but it's a start. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Would that be the answer? Would that like ease everybody's minds? Probably not, you know, because I mean, people of color have been dealing with racism for a long time and being in like being made to feel like they're different.
Yeah.
You know, and that's in like police interactions. I mean, school, you know, education,
mm-hmm.
you know, just to name two, but yeah, I don't know, man. And I hope it gets better. I mean, cause there are a lot of good cops out there. And I'll tell you that a lot of people that are trying to, that are doing this for the right reasons, you know? Yeah. So.
Yeah.
What are some ideas you have? Like, I'm sure you've thought of it yourself. Like maybe if we did this, or you were saying community outreach, like what's like an example of that? What would you think be really cool for cops and for the community to kind of come together?
I mean, I can speak to my own community, right? I feel like the biggest thing is like police interactions, right?
Because
First off, nobody wants to deal with the police,
yeah.
right? Especially if you are a suspect or someone of interest, you know what I mean? If it's us just coming to your door because you thought you had a prowler and you show up with this.
They went to the wrong door.
Yeah. So, but like everything needs to be done like... You need to think about what that's going to be like for the next officer, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Or what that person's going to like think of when all this is said and done, you know, like what, okay, that cop was cool, man. Or, mm-hmm. you know, I always get like last person I dealt with wasn't like this, or,
yeah.
but it's important for me to treat someone like a human being. Right. And to have like a positive interaction because I feel like that goes a long way.
Yeah.
You know, because there's so much, like, there's a lack of trust right now, you know, around the country with police officers, which makes our, and to see things happen, like, whether they're wrong or whether they were done lawfully or it's something that went wrong, that affects us. I mean, that sets us back so long, you know what I mean? It makes my job harder, at least mm-hmm. makes the job of my other brothers and sisters harder. Maybe not here, but then the perception's going to be there, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be like, man, you guys are cops. You know, it's everybody versus
yeah.
the police.
Mm-hmm.
And that's tough. I mean, because I try to do my job well. I try to treat people equally and fairly. You know, I'd be lying if I said, like, in 14 years, like, every interaction's been that way. But that's, I hold that, like, close to my heart, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like as a cop, when you hear, and this has nothing to do with race, but just when you hear like defund the police, like what, cause again, I got my own opinions on it. Cause it's hard then. Cause on the same token, then you'll have like, you're basically asking the citizens to be the police officers.
But, yeah.
So then you can't get mad when a vigilante group goes in to defend a place. Like,
yeah.
So when you, like, if you want street justice, then that's what you get. You get a bunch of white dudes with ARs rolling
yeah.
through the city. I mean, that's just how it is.
Yeah.
But as a cop, when you hear that, so tie this into two things. Like, police reform, do you believe there should be police reform?
Mm-hmm.
And if you do, what is that? And two, when you hear defund the police as a police officer, like, what do you think?
Oh, man. Yeah. This is tough. You know, when I first heard that term, defund the police, personally, I was offended, man, because to me, it sounded like, let's take the, like the money from police, you know, and I understood where it would go, you know, to different, like, agencies and services in the community, but initially, like, I feel like in a way, it was taken as, like, let's take money away from you guys. You guys don't need it. You know, you'll be fine without it. And we need to, like, spread the wealth, right? Which,
yeah.
which in a way, is true. you know, and I guess if I was an administrator or a politician, I'd be able to like give you an answer, right? But I'm just a patrolman, man.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I was just more asking like your feelings, like.
Yeah, I feel like there's other services in the community that need money as well, right? And I kind of saw it as like, oh, let's take money from the police. But I'm like, wait a minute, like we need some of this like to continue to grow and expand and continue to have officers that get required training that could help us deal with the issue, like these societal issues, mm-hmm. right? But with that being said, I mean, there's agencies or entities in our community that do need money as well. You know, I mean, I don't like, and I wish there was money for to go around for everyone. I mean, but you know, we need money for mental health services. You know, affordable housing. You know, like education. I mean, so it's hard. It sucks that it has to be taken within like just one, like we got to spread it around the way we see it best, you know, but yes, like those other agencies are suffering because of a lack of funding, you know? But I also feel like it's important that they get that they're improved in some way or another. I don't know. I don't have like how. I don't know how to like.
Well, it would like fix make that. Sense for the crime to go down if there's better mental health services, better education, and all those. So, we technically, eventually trickle over to where police wouldn't have to deal with homeless people.
Yeah, or, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And we all need the work, right? And that. That would like clear some of the societal issues we have because like in a way, like we're all concerned about quality of life, right? We're concerned about quality of life for the residents of Missoula, yeah. You know? But then I, as a police officer, it's like, think about how we're going to do this. You know what I mean? Cause we need continuous training on how to deal with these societal issues because I think they change, right? They mm-hmm. might be the same, on their face, but they change and we have to deal with so many different things. I mean, before I got in this job, I never knew how many like mentally ill, people I'd be dealing with, you know, and that's a huge issue. And you know, jail isn't always the right solution.
Yeah.
You know, giving someone a citation for something isn't always the right solution. So it would be nice that, you know, like these places could do their jobs, you know, have more room to do their jobs better. Cause yes, it would like, it could change the, like the way, or just, I guess a wave of crime. I don't mm-hmm. know. But yeah, it's hard, man. Cause I know other places need that, you know, and.
But then
I
you'll mean, read like an article, like in many, like for Minneapolis, right? Like, the city council votes to disband the police, and then they are now upset that the police aren't doing their job.
Yeah,
you know? So you read stuff like that, and you're kind of like, wait a minute, there's got to be a better solution here.
Yeah, I agree that there has to be a better solution. I mean, we need police, you know? If I'm at home, out of uniform, like, yeah, I want the police to be able to respond and, you know, and be able to do something if I ever am a victim of something. I don't know what the solution is going to be, but yeah, all across the board, I feel like we all need help, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. So. And so that's where I think as a preacher, I can definitely say this, words matter.
Yeah.
Like how you phrase things. And so I think that's where just in our society, words have, we've all added so many things to these words.
Yeah.
And like, so reform, I don't think reform is a bad word. Because we reform our church all the time, you know, like if you're not reforming something, you're not getting better.
Yeah.
You're not growing. So
right.
I have no problem personally with the term police reform. Cause it's like, no, we want it's for the cops too.
Yeah.
That's what sometimes people miss is it's not just for the people getting pulled over.
Yeah.
It's for the cops as well. Cause you have a stressful job and like, I mean, after 20 years, I don't know how you don't get hard, man. Like, yeah. I was just like a hard heart, and like, it's just, you yeah. know. But it, then defund is such a different word.
It is.
That's, and they just, that was a poor choice.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think so. Because, like I said,
it's a trigger
I
word.
Mean, yeah. Initially, I was like, whoa. Wait yeah, a minute.
That's your job, man.
Up. Yeah, like, I, you know, it's important that as a law enforcement agency that we continue to grow, we continue to find new ways of being able to deal with the public. And so, yeah, it like, don't take everything, you yeah. know what I'm saying? But I know, but I also understand the importance on the other side, mm-hmm. you know, because, yeah, if other agencies could have more room or be able to do their jobs, then maybe we wouldn't have the types of crimes or deal with the types of folks that we do on a daily basis.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, again, police officers need to be able to continue to, like, have the ability to continue to be better, you know.
Yeah.
So
actually I already asked all my questions, but when I was actually working at the mental health facility, they lost a lot of funding.
Yeah.
I don't remember what law passed. And that was my first thought was what's going to happen. Like, I felt like crime was going to go up.
Yeah.
So I was always curious, like, what if you guys get any like mental health training right now at all, is there anything like protocols? Cause I sometimes also feel like I saw the people there. They did like crazy crimes, and I'd be like, how are these people not in jail and just living out in
yeah.
society? So I'm wondering, is there like a difference on how you guys approach someone, maybe if you know they have like mental health issues? Or
there is, and mm-hmm. we continually get trained on these things. One of the biggest ones is dealing with people with mental health issues, you know what I mean, or just training and de-escalation.
So you guys do have like de-escalation training and things.
We
like
do.
That. Yeah,
we do. And that's something that I feel like is important for, needs to happen all the time, right? It's mm-hmm. just not like we're going to do this 1 year and then 5 years from now. I mean, cause like our world is evolving as citizens and as police officers.
Yeah. So, do you feel like a police officer has enough training before they're put out there? If you're gonna get, if you're
no,
gonna
no,
get,
no, no.
If you're gonna get fired, you don't have to say.
Yeah. There's definitely enough training. There's training that is required. Personally, like, I enjoy seeing people that come on that have some life experience, right? Because that's also some, like, in a way, training mm-hmm. for this job.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Not to say that we have some intelligent folks that come on and know exactly what to do or how to deal with things, but I think like life experience is huge too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Me growing up, I mean, we struggled. You know, we're on food stamps, so when I do, like, I know what it, like, I feel like I have tons of life experience. You know what I mean? That helps me interact with someone that I see mm-hmm. maybe having a hard time. So maybe it's not of like me against you and these are my options, but sometimes it's like being compassionate.
Yeah.
Or having the ability to be compassionate and understand, like, man, this person's down on their luck, you know. I was at a one of my training officers that always said, he always used this line, it's like, you know, to try and like ease any tensions, like, we're all a dollar away from being broke, right? Mm. Maybe it's not like, might be an exaggeration, but a huge life event can put us
yeah,
back.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
Medical like
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah. Cause in the end, we're people as well, should be able to understand that and see that. You know, I always tell people it's not like this uniform, this badge doesn't make me any different than you. Right. Cause when I take this off, you know, I've got family problems, I've got concerns, you know what I mean? There's things that hit home pretty hard that I got to deal with. But again, that, I mean, having that uniform and badge on, like, I'm given this huge responsibility, you know, and I can never like go away from that or allow that to I can't allow it to ever be a an issue that I just forget about, right? Because every day that I'm out there, I have a responsibility to the community and the members of this community, and also to my department.
Yeah.
You know. So, but I feel like, I mean, we're all in this together, right?
Yeah.
So.
Is it hard? Do you feel like the scapegoat, man? Like, talk to my other officer friends, and like you'll pull someone over because they're doing something wrong, and then they're mad at you.
Oh yeah.
They scream at you and they're upset at you. I mean, that's scapegoating in religious terms. It's taking your own crap and putting it on someone else so you don't have to deal with it. Like,
yeah.
Does that get taxing?
It does, because then I know like what I'm trying to do with my career, right? In my life as a police officer. But you also you have to have some understanding there of why that person is feeling that way, you know, where they're like last few police interactions bad, or you know, are they watching a lot of TV and now it's you know,
oh, no.
it's the police against me. But that's why it's important that, I mean, like I said, treat people fairly and try to make it a good experience. I mean, it's not always going to be that way, but in those moments where you have that opportunity, try to make it a positive experience or interaction where this person goes home and it's like, man, I just got pulled over by this cop, man, he was so cool and gave me a warning. You know, didn't treat me any differently because of the way I look or the, you know, so.
Yeah.
I mean, we have that power, you know. But yes, it does make it harder when people, you're made out to be the scapegoat.
Yeah.
Because we're not all like that, you know. We see bad things happen on TV, but that doesn't, like, that's not a representation of, like, all officers.
Yeah.
Everywhere, you know, and I feel like, you know, my brothers and sisters out there, like, try to do a great job of policing and keeping this community safe, you know, and doing what they're supposed to do.
So you said you've worked for the police department for 14 years?
Is that
what you said?
Almost 14 years.
Do you feel like you've become, like, at all cynical in a way, or that it's changed your view of certain people, or...
Like, you deal with the worst of the worst all the time. Like, I don't know, hard-hearted, I guess?
Yeah.
Is it giving you thicker skin?
I feel jaded sometimes. But then with that, I've said, I understand my responsibility, man. And if there ever came a day where that I've been influenced by this job to the point that it affects the way I treat people or do it, like, I shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
I mean, because I think that's when you do something, like, when you make mistakes, you know, and when you, or, you know, you might take something personally that might, like, escalate a situation when, in fact, it was, you could have de-escalated or could have done a better job of interacting with someone.
Yeah.
But I'm passionate about this job. I love this job, even after 14 years, dealing with people is my business, man. Like, I feel like I was put here to be an advocate for police officers or law enforcement, and also to, like, help make interactions with us, like, positive.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Sometimes I find myself in situations with dealing with juveniles, right?
Yeah.
And, like, I thrive in those situations, man, because it's like I don't try to go in there and treat this person as if they were, like, you know, a middle-aged person that should have known better, you know, because sometimes they don't, right? Or there's issues, there's underlying issues, you know, with their mental health or their home life. But I feel like in those situations, man, that, like, that is my time to shine. That is my time to, like, speak to a juvenile, a young person, just like a young person, and give them that respect, you know, because they might not get it at school. They might not get it at home.
Yeah.
And I just love that, man, just being able to sit down and talk, because, I mean, kids are, you know, they're impressionable.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're hard. Man, you know, get your point across, man. But it's if I can give myself that opportunity every time, that might change the way that kid grows up. you know, or might change that kid in a way that they're like, you know what, I'm going to think twice about doing this because I don't want the cops showing up.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's our future there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good, man. Well, man, thanks a lot for coming on and on your day off and giving us a great perspective, and you represent the community well, man. And
thank you. We appreciate it.
That's it, man.
Oh,
that's,
man.
Well, yeah, that's honestly, an hour.
That went by so fast.
Yeah. It was really encouraging to like hear you speak. Like, thank you. Especially with the juvenile part, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's important. I mean, it's all important, but that's great. Yeah. Well, nice meeting you.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. I want to give a shout out to the men and women of the police department who, you know, fight the good fight every day and do a good job. I'm a proud member of our department, man. And I've been blessed by having the opportunity to be there.
So. Well, you're a blessing to the community, and we appreciate you. And again, thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Bless you, brother.